Blog Talk Radio.
See, Muhammad give you knowledge that you can't say pop it. He my father already here, let alone coming. Let every ear hear, he be blowing like a trumpet. I use my music like a gun and I'ma dump it. Cause I'm coming. Hey, bro, I do this for my God and all he come. Yes, sir. You best believe it, make no assumptions. You trick or treat on Halloween, it ain't about pumpkins. You feed your mind the wrong thing and it be nonsense. He call you dead cause you kill your own conscience. The innocent and right and wrong in one's conduct. Rebel against Allah, who knows where you wind up. And for you devils, my God says your time's up. That food from my father, that heavenly water. Brother, stop been ignoring and started to smart. He took murderers and made a man and true father. Just imagine what he can do. What if you rob? He can show you how to eat to live if you bother. Show you how to see, bring it fear with no problem. So many deviating be laying under the needle. The son of man, he's the son of the sequel. A result, a consequence, an interference, and he won't stop until we equal in a
pair. All of my people, all of my people, just wanna be equal.
Strong taste. Cause when you a man, you belong in your own place. Message of a lie, teach you how to hold your own weight. One shot, one home, sister, one grace. One God, one stone, brother, one faith. Every knee shall bow, every knee shall kneel. Every beast in the wild, everyone shall heal. Standing black and proud, in peace we'll live. And any praise to God for the life we're given. You got power, all you gotta be is willing. You got space, all you gotta be is building. And if you got knowledge, then you gotta feed the children. We got some in college, but a lot of my people kill. I'm a fisherman, man, and all I gotta be is real. He raised me up, so I can see the fires on the ceiling.
All of my people, all of my people, just wanna be equal, wanna be equal. I'm coming to get ya.
Divine messenger and apostle, and that
the most honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the divine servant and comfort in our midst. And I want to greet you all in the greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sir.
Do we have Brother Victor on?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, dear brother. We thank you again and for, you know, being on. And we thank you so much. It is an honor and our pleasure to have you on, brother. We thank you once again. And before we go into our topic and discussion, I would like to open us up in mighty prayer. So I ask all guests and listeners, manner of prayer. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, surely I have turned myself to thee. O Allah, turning to be upright to him who originated the heavens and the earth, and I am not of the apostates. Surely my prayer and my sacrifice, my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has he, and this am I commanded, and I am of those who submit. O Allah, thou art the King, there is no God but thee. Thou art my Lord, and I am thy servant. I have been greatly unjust to myself, and I confess my fault. So grant me protection against all of my faults. For none grants protection against faults but thee, and guide me into the best of morals. For none guides us into the best of morals but thee, and turn away from me the evil and indecent morals. For none can turn away from me the evil and indecent morals but thee. O Allah, bless Muhammad, and bless the true followers of Muhammad, as thou didst bless Abraham and the true followers of Abraham. Surely thou art praised and magnified. O Allah, make Muhammad successful, and make the true followers of Muhammad successful, as thou didst make Abraham and the true followers of Abraham successful. Surely thou art praised and magnified. Ameen.
Ameen.
All right. Again, I want to greet you all. I bear witness there is no God but Allah, and that Muhammad is his messenger, and that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is divine servant and confident in our midst. And I would like to greet you all in the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum
salam. Alaikum salam, sir.
And peace be unto you, to all our dear brothers and sisters and family who don't know what Assalamu alaikum means. It just simply means peace be unto you and, you know, or peace be with you. And so Nation Building Movement presents Young, Gifted, and Black's topic of discussion, the importance of good food and the power of growing. And so we want to jump right into this mighty subject, this very vital subject. And but first, we want to introduce our panelists, our very successful and very dear brother Victor Muhammad. We want to introduce him to Young, Gifted, and Black and thank him again for being a part of this show tonight. And we want to, he's a very successful biomedical research doctor and also a scientist. And I want to give you, dear brother, an option or a chance to introduce yourself to the guests and listeners.
Thank you, dear brother. Yes, in the name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, to whom praises are due forever. And I bear witness that the most honorable Elijah Muhammad is his Messiah, and the honorable Louis Farrakhan is their reminder in our midst today. I greet you all in the greeting words of peace and paradise, as we say in our native tongue, of Arabic. Assalamu alaikum. As our dear host stated, my name is Brother Victor Muhammad, and I am striving to be a biomedical research scientist, and also I am trained probably for the last 30 years as an agricultural research scientist as well. My actual college training is agricultural research, but starting in 1990, I began doing biomedical research, and that's where the lion's share of my professional work has taken place. So I've worked at several research institutions in this country, and I've done lectures and teaching at other research institutions, mostly biomedical, in different parts of the world. And so at the present time, I am running my own biomedical and social science research institute here in the state of Florida called Life Sciences of Washington, where I mostly concentrate on HIV and AIDS. So hopefully that gives you an idea of my background, but I'm willing at any time to answer any questions that anyone might have pertaining to my training or my background. So thank you very much, dear brother, for giving me the opportunity to introduce myself.
No problem, dear brother. Thank you. And that is very beautiful. And, you know, all of the things that are involved in your study and your experience as, you know, you take on your life journey as being a scientist, you know, and we thank you so much for sharing that with us and being able to, you know, share your knowledge and experiences with us and just being open for discussion. We thank you so much. And that is beautiful concerning that our word of the day is, and our word of the day is agriculture. And I just want to really quick. I wanted to go into what it means, the word agriculture. The word agriculture means the business or practice of raising crops, vegetables or fruits, and livestock, which means farm animals or cattle. Farming, the science of farming, cultivation of the land. And, you know, that is very interesting, and who better to have than, you know, an agriculturist, because I was going to go into what it means and what you have to have agriculture. You would have to have an agriculturist, and which is basically saying in order to have farming, we must have farmers, you know, and a farmer is those who raise cattle and produce fruits and vegetation. 100% of the time when we go to, you know, grocery stores, you know, the produce section is really, you know, raised by a farm, or it is produced by a farm or farmer. So we just want to really raise the respect level of farmers and agriculturists and agriculture as it is, you know. So that is very beautiful, because we need more farmers and people who are involved in the farming business. Especially since, you know, also like how the minister says, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan always says, rain, hail, snow, and earthquake are all science. But in order to have science, you must have a scientist. And so that's just like, you know, for any form, you know, to have food and vegetables and crops and things of that nature that have farm animals that are well kept, we must have a farmer that, you know, does these things. And so, so I want to go into, and also not just crops, a farmer is one who prepared and provided that goes, you know, and provided that goes also for the different meats that we eat. You know, they raise lamb, chickens, and beef, which is from cows. And so these are all animals that have to be raised and properly cared for. So we just want to, you know, again, raise the respect level of farmers and agriculture, because if there is no food, then there is no life. There can be no life. And so that is very interesting that brother said that he's in the study of agriculture, because that is our word of the day. And so I want to move right on forward into our questions to our panelists, brother Victor. Our first question is, and I'll pose our first question. And let's just, Cynthia Tyrant.
Yes, sir, I'm here. You can go ahead and pose the first question, but I just wanted to make a comment to Brother Victor again, and also in showing my appreciation for, you know, being on the show, and because this is a very important topic, and I mean, people think about food, you know, as just, you know, we live to eat. That's the mentality most people have. I get up to eat, you know, I got a snack, I'm going to have lunch, I'm going to have a snack, I'm going to have dinner, I'm going to have a snack, I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night for a snack. And it's just, I mean, food is so important. It's the fuel for our body, you know, but you know, you don't overload your car with fuel, but you have to keep enough for it to keep running. So I just appreciate you for being, you know, being on the call and having the knowledge that you have and, you know, the spirit to want to share it. So I just thank you, and I'm really excited for the outcome of the show.
Well, thank you very much for the comment, Sister. It's a pleasure for me to be on the show, and I pray to Allah that I will be blessed to say something with which the listeners can leave the show tonight having moved forward even just a degree in their understanding. That would be a success.
Yes, sir. All praise be to Allah.
Yes, sir. All praise be to Allah. So, Brother Victor, our first question to you from me, can you tell us, just to give us a simpler and better understanding, can you tell us what exactly are biochemicals and how they work once inside the human body?
No problem. Biochemicals, bio means life, and chemical comes from the word chemistry, or goes back to the word of the original name of the place that is now called Egypt. It was Kemet before it was Egypt, and the Greeks renamed it Egypt when they took over, and that is where the word chemistry comes from, that part of the world that we call Egypt. And chemistry just identifies those elements that exist in nature on this planet. And biochemistry means those chemicals or those chemical elements that you find inside a living system. And there are only two living systems known to the scientific world, and those two living systems would be plant or animal. So basically, anytime any of those substances or elements are inside the human body, they take on many different functions, from being combining to make a compound like sodium chloride, potassium chloride, which are salts, to many different other chemicals in the body. So that's an that's a very broad question. But that's the best general answer that I can give.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That is beautiful. I didn't know that, you know. So you're saying chemi, C-H-E-M, comes from, it means Egypt, or I name a land like Egypt?
No, no, sir. What I said was, before that country that is now called Egypt, before it was called Egypt, it was Kemet, K-E-M-I-T. And that is where the word chemistry originated. Not from Egypt, but from the word Kemet.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I understand. So, but that was a very beautiful answer. It definitely gave me a better understanding what biochemicals are. And the two life forms, which is plant and animal, so that's very beautiful. And the second part of that question was how they work once inside the body. But also what I wanted to, you pretty much answered that. So my next question is, what kind of research have you done that involves creating natural medicines that improve fruits and vegetables? What kind of research have you done that involves natural medicines that improve foods like fruits and vegetables, of those two kinds of life forms that you just mentioned, like plant and animal?
Well, I have not personally done any research that deal with fruits or vegetables as a medicine. Let's first of all get an understanding of what a fruit is and what a vegetable is. Any fruit that we eat is a vegetable. That's something that we use colloquially and oftentimes incorrectly. What is a fruit? A fruit is a ripened ovary. A vegetable is any plant or plant part that is used for food. So all fruits that we eat are in fact vegetables.
Wow.
But not all vegetables are fruits. Give you an example. The leaves of a cabbage. That is a vegetable, but it's not a fruit. The reason it's not a fruit is because the cabbage itself can't reproduce itself. It doesn't contain any genetic material that will allow it to reproduce itself. But an apple is a fruit, but it's also a vegetable because we can eat it. So that's the difference. Now, fruits and vegetables, if we're going to use the word medicine, fruits and vegetables are natural medicines, if you're going to use that term. The reason I say if you're going to use that term is because medicine is something that just came about maybe 100 or so years ago. That is something that was coined by the American Medical Association. Because before then, you had people who were called physicians. I believe that one of the disciples, maybe Paul or someone who followed Jesus, was a physician. But he wasn't a doctor. He wasn't a medical doctor. So what's the difference? Is there a difference? Those things that are considered medicines just recently came about in the last 100 or so years. Prior to that, people used plants or animal material to treat themselves, or people fasted. You know, I'm not saying for everybody who's listening to run out tonight and stop taking medicine. I'm not telling you that. That is a decision that you have to make once you have the proper level of understanding and knowledge. The acquisition of knowledge is probably the best thing that you can do. But what I am saying is that if we were to eat properly, if we were to fast, if we were to drink adequate amounts of water, in the plant material that you eat is the biochemicals, as you asked at the onset of the discussion, dear brother, the biochemicals in the plant material that we eat are the elements that we need to repair pretty much any injury or any problem that takes place in the body. When you study the physiology of the body and you study the immune system and the different regulatory systems in the body comes automatically equipped to pretty much repair any damage that is done to it if you leave it alone. Part of the problem that we have with the body and the body taking care of itself as it's programmed to do is that we interfere with that. And generally we will do that by taking medicines, drugs. We will generally do that by what we consume on a daily basis under the guise of our diet or what we eat and drink. That kind of gives you an idea of what I'm talking about. So let's take onions and garlic. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad in How to Eat to Live says that we should eat all the onions and garlic that we can stand. He didn't go into that. He didn't go into explaining why. But back when I was working as a scientist at the National Institutes of Health, I looked into that. And what you will find in onions and garlic is probably the most abundant antibiotic that exists outside the ultraviolet rays of the sun, and that is sulfur. Sulfur is a natural antibiotic, and onions and garlic contain sulfur. Therefore, if you do what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad recommended, by eating onions and garlic every day, what happens is that the sulfur in the onions and garlic during the digestive process gets into your bloodstream. Once it gets into your bloodstream, it's circulated all over the body. Once that happens, all the microorganisms that are not helpful to the body that are found in the bloodstream are killed. So after eating onions and garlic in, let's say you put it in your navy bean soup, after 2 to 3 years, you should have a very, very, very drastic reduction in the number of colds that you get, the number of flus that you get during the year, and every other sickness that comes about as a result of a microorganism or an infection that comes about as a result of a microorganism. You should get a drastic reduction in that after a while. So I can speak for Victor Muhammad. In the last 24 years, I have been sick twice. I got sick in 1994 with the flu because I permitted myself to be stressed. And I got sick in 1999 with the flu because I permitted myself to be stressed. But other than those two instances, I have not been sick. I hope that gives you an idea, dear brother, to your question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Wow, that's very very, very interesting and very powerful testimony, because most people, you know, are always sick, you know, but that I really believe that, you know, if you eat the right things, and I didn't know onions and garlic specifically, but I would try to eat more of that now that I know that it prevents you from getting so many sicknesses and illness. So I thank you for that. Thank you. That's a very beautiful answer, brother.
Thank you.
Very beautiful answer.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And yes, sir. So, sister, your team would be going to ask a question or go to the guests and listeners, let them.
I'll ask a question. I have a quick question, and you can go to the audience.
Yes, ma'am.
I have two of them, but I'm going to go to the audience. Can you go into depth about why eating 4 and 5 times a day, whether it be small meals or breakfast snack, lunch snack, dinner snack, and why that's not, you know, the best way to eat, and, you know, the harms? They're just going into just more about the science of that and how the effect it has on the body versus eating one meal a day or every other day.
Yes, ma'am. That is a good question. When you study the sciences of anatomy and the science of physiology, you'll have a lot of people who have educated themselves and acquired knowledge from things like Wikipedia or Google. Or you'll find a lot of people listen to people who have basically no training in your core sciences like anatomy, physiology, immunology, and things like that. And so the people are really miseducated. And the reason I say that is because of what I'm about to say. Excuse me. The human body, in the entire human body, there is only one muscle that I know that is designed to work constantly. That muscle is the heart. And if you have ever seen a heart, and I have, then you would see how fibrous and dense the heart is. You can see that the heart is designed to work a long time without any repair and without breaking down. So when you eat a meal, it takes approximately 8 hours to digest one meal. And if you eat, let's just say, 3 times a day, not 5, let's not go to the extreme yet, if you eat 3 times a day, and it takes approximately 8 hours to digest each of those 3 meals, then you are, in fact, working your stomach and your digestive system 24 hours a day. And the only muscle in the body designed to work constantly is the heart. So you find now that by the time we are in our mid-30s, especially men, you find that most of us have big stomachs. We might be slim. We might be slim in stature, but we have a big stomach. And we ask ourselves, and you might ask yourself, why is that man so slim but has this big stomach? And it's probably because it just has food sitting in there that's undigested. There have been reports in the scientific and medical community of people, well-known celebrities, who have died. And when an autopsy was performed on them, they found that there were several pounds of undigested red meat in the intestinal tract. And that probably was there because when you eat a meal, let's say you eat steak or beef, beef is, according to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, one of the most coarse meats that you can eat. He stated that in How to Eat to Live. And when you study the muscles of beef, they have what is called striated muscle tissue. And that is a very dense muscle tissue, and it's coarse. And the acid that's required to digest that meat is concentrated with a pH of 5 or less. So it's a very concentrated acid that the lining of the stomach wall has to excrete to digest the beef. And when you eat the beef without cooking it properly, under steam or something like that, then the meat is not well done. So we see people in the movies who act the cook to just put the marks on the steak. They don't want it. They want it pink on the inside. So when you eat that, now you're eating something that in its natural state is already difficult to digest. But then when you don't cook it thoroughly, now you're putting something in your stomach that it's almost impossible for the stomach to digest it. So it sits there in your intestinal tract, sometimes for years. And so now you have a situation where you are forcing additional food into the stomach, because the stomach has been working on trying to digest this steak all this time. Now it's 8 hours later, and you're putting another meal down there. So as soon as the mouth starts to chew the meal, that signals the stomach that some more food is about to come down. It signals the small and large intestines that they need to prepare, because another load is coming down. So what happens at that point is that the small and large intestines start to push that meal out or get it out of the way to make room for the meal that is now coming down. So we end up overworking the stomach. We end up overworking the digestive system and all the other systems in the body, because you don't give it the opportunity to rest. The body has to have time to rest. So when you eat your meal, as the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us, between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m., once a day or once every other day or once every 3 days, then you give the body adequate time to rest and, more importantly, to repair itself. I hope that was a good answer for you, this time.
Good answer is an understatement. That was an excellent answer.
All praise due to Allah.
Answered more than one question. It answered that question. It was thorough. I really appreciate that answer. I work downtown, and you know I'm at work and I fast, you know, throughout the day. I don't eat. You know, I typically strive to eat, you know, between 4 and 6. So because I get off at 5, I don't eat normally until I get home. So, you know, my coworkers, they're always just like, you know, you're skinny enough as it is. You know, why are you not eating? You need to eat. You need to at least eat breakfast. Breakfast is the most important time of the most important meal of the day. And I'm trying to get, I haven't finished reading. You know, but as I'm just trying to explain to them, I know the basics on how the stomach, you know, what you were just saying about the food, how long it takes to digest. But, you know, they're just constantly coming at me on why are you supposed to eat it, and, you know, why you should eat in the morning and things like that. So I'm just, you know, building up my knowledge, so when I go to work, I'm a little bit more studied until I finish, you know, How to Eat to Live and get into more of that. But I really appreciate that answer.
All praises due to Allah.
It's a very beautiful answer. I agree. And, It was very enlightening, very enlightening. I did not know that the heart is the only muscle that is designed to work constantly, and that is very beautiful. That was very beautiful, and also that the stomach, that falls right in line with, I was just watching a lecture from our dear brother Abdul Muhammad on YouTube, and you can find this lecture on YouTube. It's called Going Ham by Brother Abdul Muhammad, and this brother is, you know, going into and demonstrating, demonstrating the use of pork, demonstrating, how the body works and on pork and eating habits and things like that, and why we should eat one meal a day. And he just gave us the travel time in the digestive system, which he said for the esophagus, it takes 3 to 6 seconds to go down the esophagus. And then it takes 3 to 5 hours to go through your stomach. And then it takes 8 to 12 hours to get through your small intestine. And then it takes 12 to 18 hours to get through the large intestine. And that is a total of like between 24 and 36 hours, which is one day. And that's for one meal. And so for people who eat 5 and 6, so that's right in line with Brother Victor was saying. That's right in line with how our stomach works. That is very true. We should only really eat one meal a day because our body needs time to rest. You can't keep filling it up over and over and over. And so, very beautiful insight, brother. And also, before we go to the man.
Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am, and I was going to say, brother, even went into when you go to sleep, everything shuts down except for the brain. And so whatever is being digested or consumed cannot continue being digested until you wake up. Well, I think it's the brain and the heart, but I don't even know. I think it's the brain, though. And so whatever's being digested or consumed cannot continue being digested until you wake up again. So that means your body is not, your stomach is not working when you sleep. So that limits the time that you, so that's very important to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says, eat between 4 and 6 before you go to bed. Give your body time to at least work on the food. And then when you get up, it has more time to get it all out. And then brother also went into, he gave us the exact number of meals a year if we eat 5 meals a day. He said if you eat 5 meals a day at 365 days a year, that means you would have to eat 1,825 meals in just 365 days. 1,825 meals, that is a lot of meals. And if you do eat like this, you should be having bowel. If you eat 5 times, then that means you should have 5 bowel movements a day. And this is very, very a very beautiful, enlightening subject, because this actually shows how this can make us live longer, make us look more better, because, our body is not so stressed. We won't be bent out of shape. We'll be, if we fast 3 days out of the month, or at least 3 days out of the month, and then we only eat one meal a day. That is, we're not even eating the full 365 meals that it would take for each day, so we are extending our life and our stomach life, basically. And so, very beautiful, very beautiful. Thank you. And go ahead, sis.
Thank you, brother. I just wanted to ask. You said that when you were talking about the steaks, you were just saying that it could take several years, depending on the situation with the steak. I'm assuming. So what happens
when, you know, if you eat steak, say it's not raw, you know, say you eat well done, and you fast, say 3 days, does that help speed up the process, or is it, I mean, does it matter if fasting, are you still looking at that long period of time?
Well, you see, one of the things that I have tried to share with people, dear sister, is that contrary to popular belief, if you ever notice, when you're listening to a person who is actually a scientist, as opposed to, let's say, a person who reads a lot and has educated themselves by reading a lot or by listening to somebody else. If you listen to a person who is actually a scientist, and you listen on television sometimes or listen to the news, you'll find that a scientist is very, very careful with what he or she says. And they will generally give you general answers. Why is this? Is it because the scientist doesn't know? No, that's not the reason. The reason the scientist will be very careful about what he says, or the reason he gives general answers or give you a range, is because in many instances there is no specific response, because it will depend. And that is the phrase that you will often hear a scientist say. He might say, well, it depends. Generally, that's how he will begin his response, because it does depend on different, what we would call variables, different characteristics. And so I levied that preface, because if you eat, let's say if I eat a steak, and sometimes, maybe three times a year, I might eat a ribeye steak. And I like to blacken it, because I'm originally from the Mississippi Delta. And we eat spicy food from that area, well-seasoned food. So what I might do is get a ribeye steak, and I'll buy one, not the Angus beef that is raised in this country. Some supermarkets sell beef that comes from Mexico, and that's what I will buy, the one that comes from Mexico. If you get the Angus beef, cook it and eat it, and then check your immune system, your nose and your mouth, and check to see how you feel after you've eaten the beef that came from the United States, the Angus beef, and check how you feel once you eat the steak that comes from Mexico, and you will be able to see that there is a difference. There's a difference in the taste. There's a difference in the physiology of how your body will react to it between the two. Now, I cook the steak well, which means that you would find in nature is the bite from a venomous animal like a snake or a spider. What is venom? Venom is nothing but an enzyme that's pretty much very similar to the digestive enzymes that's inside your stomach. So when a snake bites you or a spider bites you or bites an insect or something, the digestive process takes place once the bite occurs, the stability of it, how good it tastes, the salt that's in the seasoning stimulates the digestive process inside the stomach. So the stomach, the cells, through a process called cytokinesis, meaning the communication between cells, signal those cells in your mouth, signal the ones in the stomach that this is beef. So the stomach starts to excrete hydrochloric acid from little pumps inside the stomach lining. So by the time the steak reaches the stomach, the acid is already there waiting on it to break it down. Then inside the small and large intestines, other enzymes like lipases and proteases also are excreted inside the intestine to finish breaking down the steak to smaller pieces. But because the stomach is empty, then the stomach is ready and the stomach is waiting. So by the time it reaches the stomach, everything in the stomach just jumps right all over that steak and whatever else you eat. So it goes ahead, and under a couple of hours, it's digested that thing and processed it, sends it down into the small intestine, the large intestine, and where all the nutrients, vitamins, minerals that the body can use are extracted from it, and then it's sent on out.
Wow. That is amazing.
All praise
to God.
Oh, talk about helpful. Yes, sir. Thank you. That is very deep. That's thorough. It painted a picture in my head. You know, the way you explain things. So I really appreciate that, and I'm sure our audience does as well. And I don't want to prolong any more questions from me. If Brother Ronnie, you're ready to open up the lines for the audience.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And again, thank you, sir, for posing that question. Thank you, Brother Victor, for that beautiful insight and answer. It was very clear and very knowledgeable. Thank you so much, dear brother. So now we're going to give the audience and our guests and listeners a chance to communicate with you and ask their questions and comment on our discussion. So, Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir. Assalamualaikum.
Waalaikumsalam.
Dear brother.
Yes, sir. Right now I see one person with their hand up. Let me remind the listening audience that if you are tuned in via telephone, please hit the number 1 on your dial pad to join the conversation for your question or comment. If you're in the chat room, type in your question, and we will definitely ask your question and get an answer for you. So I'm going to take this first comment or question. Area code 813, your mic is live. Brother James, is that you?
Yes, sir, dear brother. I had to take it off of mute.
Yes,
assalamu alaikum. How are you, Brother Kareem?
Wa alaikum salam. Fine, sir.
All praise is due to Allah and Brother Ronnie, Sister Yatira, and of course, I wish to extend my greetings to my brother and scientist, Brother Victor Muhammad. How you doing, dear brother?
Hey, Brother James. Wa alaikum salam. Good to hear you, brother. I'm well by God's grace and mercy.
All praise is due to Allah. I wanted to get, of course, the greetings extended to all. And I do have a question as we have been viewing the minister's lecture series entitled The Time and What Must Be Done. In some of those installments, he talks about the government initiative in the genetically modified fruits or vegetables. And, of course, he's put laws into effect that would not allow any redress to anyone who suffers as a result of digesting or ingesting those genetically modified foods. Is there anything that we can do, dear brother, according to your knowledge as lay people, that we might be able to discern in some way what fruits and vegetables or foods are genetically modified that we at least can safeguard, other than, of course, the ultimate safeguard, which is to grow our own? But what can we do, brother, or are we just at the subject to the onslaught of these demons trying to kill us through our mouths?
Well, that's a good question, Brother James, and I'm glad you raised it. I'm going to give a short answer, and then I'll explain it a little bit and go from there in the spirit of Allah. First of all, you have to assume that every fruit and every vegetable that you eat today is genetically modified. If I were you, I would assume that. And that's not just a callous statement. I actually mean that. You must assume that it's genetically modified, whether it's plant or animal. In 1989, I worked as an environmental analyst with the United States Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. My job was to review applications for permits from your large farm companies and agricultural companies that wanted permits to release genetically modified organisms into the environment. My job was to write environmental assessments and environmental impact statements for the first President Bush and Congress. And that's what I did for a while, and I had to sign a letter of confidentiality where I could not discuss anything on which I worked for 5 years after I left the agency. Well, it's been a lot more than 5 years now. But so that's number one. Number two, we are almost at the mercy of them, whether we like it or not. We are almost, and I mean, I'm a little reluctant to say we are at the mercy of them, because maybe not exclusively, but you can almost say that, yes, we are at their mercy. And what do I mean by that? Well, because we are pretty much busy spending money on cars and rims and flossing and things like that, and not so much on land. When I lived in Maryland in the D.C. area, the big thing was to buy a house that cost $400,000, $450,000, and I'm talking about black people. And the house would look like a Barbie doll house, a big Barbie doll house, but the yard or the land or the lot on which it sits would be about the size of a postage stamp. Mm. So you couldn't grow anything on it. And even when we say we're growing things ourselves, well, where did you get the seeds? You purchased them from a seed producer. So even if you grew it yourself, it's still most likely genetically engineered, because most plants today are genetically modified. Doesn't matter where you get them, they're genetically modified. Now, there are a few companies around the globe where you can purchase they're called non-GMO seeds, non-genetically modified seeds. And they are a lot less expensive than the genetically modified seeds. And if you're looking for seeds that are not genetically modified, go into your local hardware store and get the cheapest seeds you can find. When I say cheap, the least costly. If you can find a pack of seeds for about $1.79, then more than likely those are not genetically modified, because genetically modified seeds are extremely expensive. Now, here's another note. Most agricultural commodities. What is a commodity? I know you hear that word all the time. A commodity is anything produced agriculturally. That means food, fiber. That means plant material. That means meat from animals. That means the hide, the hooves, the horns, the teeth, the entrails from animals. And so now, pretty much anything that you that is grown today, like your tomatoes, your watermelons, your tomatoes, watermelons, most of your berries, like those, they are all produced by what is called totipotent, or cloning, where you just get a cutting. I can take a piece of plant material now, and there is a media, a liquid, that you can place a piece of the plant on. You lay that on the material, and that piece of plant material will start to grow. And once it grows, starts to grow, it will eventually produce roots. Then once it starts to produce roots, then you just put it in some soil, and now you've got a plant. So you've produced a plant now where you didn't even need a seed. So whatever the age, of the plant was from which you took that cutting, that's how old the plant is now that you're growing. So now in 1 year, where it used to take 2 years or 3 years for a peach tree to produce fruit, if you cut a piece, get it to growing, now that tree that you just got growing is the same age now that the tree was from which you took the cutting. So now you can produce peaches now in a year and two maximum. You're producing peaches now. So I hope that answered your question, brother.
Wow. It definitely addresses the question. And I must say also, unfortunately, it doesn't engender much hope. But, of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in these lecture series, as well as in many of his lectures, he teaches us that we must become producers. We must go to the land. And then, of course, the scientists, such as yourself, then guide us as to how to get the best out of the land and how to, to plant, to cultivate, to nurture the land so that we can ensure to the best of our ability that we're getting a wholesome product. This is so critical, not only because of America's disregard for the people's health, but she purposely has an agenda of depopulation. And they have discerned through science that the best way to depopulate the earth is, of course, through the foods and the chemical warfare that's being waged on the people of the earth. But thank you, brother. I just wanted to ask that question. As we know, this is a real threat to our health. We're feeding our babies this, and since the effects over a protracted period of time, a long period of time, we don't generally pay attention to any threat that these genetically modified foods present. And ultimately, we suffer. But I want to also say, and I'll close, Brother Victor, that the skill, the knowledge, and the science that you have, there's so much needed in the nation. I would encourage you that you seek out those who are educated and trained, such as yourself, and create a cadre, a group, if you will. It could be under the auspices of which ministry is that? The agricultural or trade and commerce ministry. But we've got to get busy, brother. And while the world is benefiting from your knowledge, the people you work with, the institutions you work with, we definitely need that benefit in the Nation of Islam.
Right
there in Tallahassee and, of course, in Florida, but throughout the nation, dear brother, we need your skills, your talents, your gifts, your resources.
Yes.
All right? So I just want to say a word of encouragement to you and to any who have that kind of skill and knowledge and training. May Allah continue to bless you, brother. I look forward to seeing you at some point, perhaps at the Day of Atonement. But may Allah continue to bless you, brother. And thank you, Brother Ronnie, Sister Utira, for this wonderful show. I'm enjoying myself immensely as I tune in. Now I'm trying to tune in every week to hear my young brothers and sisters express themselves. I just have the bone to pick with Brother Ronnie about his CD, but I ain't going then. But I will go there. I will go there when I see you, brother. So may Allah continue to bless you all.
Yes, sir. Thank you, dear brother, and may Allah continue to bless you. We thank you so much for posing such beautiful questions. We thank you, and I have that particular package for you, brother. Please don't kill me. Yes, sir. So, yes, sir. Brother Victor, a beautiful answer. We thank
yes,
you
sir.
Again. Beautiful answers. And I want to, if we have any listeners, guests and listeners that are waiting with their hands up, brother, we want to give them another chance. Anybody else?
No, sir, Brother Ronnie. No one at this time, either in chat or on the phone, with a question.
Yep.
All I say is roll on, black man, roll on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, will do. So, Brother Victor, I just had a couple of questions about the GMO thing. You said that there are seeds that you can get that are GMO-free, that are genetically modified free, and you can get them from where, you said?
You can go into your local hardware store and find seeds that, you know, you find them sitting on this rack that you turn. Generally, the seeds that don't cost a lot of money, they're generally not genetically engineered seed. But, and you can also go on the internet and type in non-GMO seeds into one of the search engines, and it should retrieve companies online that sell seeds that are not genetically engineered.
So dear brother, you know, to go into that further, could you explain first why would the genetically modified seeds be more than the natural seed? I don't quite understand that.
Well, that's a good question. Anytime you have something that occurs in nature, then you cannot patent that thing. So if you go out into a field and find a mouse running around in a field, you cannot patent that mouse. But if you take that same mouse that you got out of the field or caught in someone's house, you put that mouse in a cage, and you start to breed that mouse and change its genetic makeup, or you take that mouse, and if it's a female, you take embryos from that mouse. If you inject new DNA into that mouse, and you get that DNA to incorporate into that mouse's genome, so that when the animal is born, it has the new gene or new genes incorporated in its genome, then that is not a mouse that is found in nature. Now what you can do, if you can prove that that gene is now incorporated into that mouse's genome, then you can patent that because it does not occur in nature. So now you have something that you own. The same with genetically engineered plants. I'll give you an example. In the 1980s, Monsanto has a tobacco plant or a tomato plant that might have the gene for the herbicide Roundup incorporated in its genetic makeup. The purpose for that would be when you're growing the tobacco or growing the tomato, you can spray Roundup right over the plant and the Roundup won't kill it. It will kill every other plant that's around the plant, but it won't kill this particular plant because it has the gene for Roundup already in its genetic makeup. So now you cannot patent a tomato that you find in nature. So if you have those seeds, well, you can only sell those seeds for a small amount of money because everybody has them. But if you change the genetic makeup of the seed by incorporating the chemical for Roundup in the plant's genetic makeup, now you have something that does not occur in nature, and now you can patent that. And another word for a patent is monopoly. That's what a patent is. The government gives you a 20-year monopoly on your invention in exchange for you disclosing to the government how to make your invention. That is what a patent is. So now you have a monopoly on something, so you can set the price for whatever you want it to be. Do you understand?
Oh, yes, sir, dear brother. I definitely understand now in a clear way that you put it. I definitely understand. That's a beautiful answer. I understand now. So basically, you're saying that you create your own product. I mean, it may look like and be deprived out of something else, but it's different. It has something. It's different. It has more things added to it, so maybe you can boost the price up on it if it's considered your product now. So you can basically sell it for as much as you like because it's yours, considered yours, and not nature's. Or
well, you see, one of the things that I would like for us to. On which I'd like for us to concentrate, and that is our use of language and our use of words. We should strive that every word we speak, we know the definition of that word. If you don't know the definition of a word, then it's probably a good idea not to use it. Now, I said that to say this, that is not considered yours. If you invented it, it is yours. And that's what the patent tells you. You have a 20-year monopoly on what you own. And for 20 years, no one else can make or produce this thing. You see? So that's one of the reasons the price is high. But another reason is it takes years sometimes to clone something or make a functional genetically engineered product. When I worked at the National Institutes of Health in 1990, my job was to make genetically engineered mice and rats. So I had to take the embryos from mice, inject the egg with foreign DNA, re-implant those eggs into a pseudo-pregnant or a surrogate female, let her carry them to term. Then when the mice were born, I would have to cut off the part of the tail, put that in a digestion buffer that would digest the tail so that I could get the DNA. I would pull the DNA out of that tail solution and run it on a gel. And I would already know the size of the gene that I incorporated or injected into the DNA. And if I saw that gene on the gel, then I know that now I have something that never occurred in nature before. It is now a genetically engineered mouse. So that's how that science works. And sometimes that take that might take 10 years. So what the scientist has to do, or what the company has to do, is recoup their investment. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, sir. You said that sometimes they have to recoup their investment. You said what now?
Yes, sir. They have to recoup their investment. So, okay, let's say the average molecular biologist, genetics engineer, might make
$125,000. Sir?
Did we lose him?
We look like we lost him. Let me get him back.
Okay.
Let me get him back. Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir. Immediately. I'm working on it now. Please stand by. We have just a little difficulty. We're going to get our panelists back on immediately.
Yes, sir. Thank you, dear brother. No problem.
There we go.
Get into it, huh?
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, sir, brother. We lost for a moment. We got you back now.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I guess I must have been revealing too much information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We deal with this all the time, so there's no problem. Y'all go right ahead.
Okay. So what happened? So you've got a genetics engineer that's making $125,000 a year. Now, in the average laboratory where you're doing serious work, there's a difference in work that you see going on in some places. I'm not going to call any names. But then when they on the fifth floor, you've got 12 labs. And in each one of those labs, everybody is working on the same thing. So each one of those scientists might be making $75,000 to $125,000 a year. They're all working on the same project. So you multiply that, those salaries for, let's say, generally there might be four scientists in each lab, and there are 12 of them on one floor. So now you've got all those salaries, one piece of equipment with which you do genetics might cost $400,000. A microscope that's used to do injections, a Zeiss microscope might cost you $125,000, and there are four of them in each lab. So now you're investing about $30 million a year for 10 years to develop this genetically engineered plant. See, this is what you don't get on television when someone is discussing this. You see, so now you're talking about $300 million over 10 years, and that's conservative. That's a conservative figure. So once FDA or USDA grants a permit on this new invention, now you've got to recoup your money because you've got stockbrokers and investors that gave you the money to fund this event. Now are you getting the picture of how this thing works?
Yes, sir. Like a big, like a big drug hustle. Sound like a big drug hustle to me or something. Something like that.
Well, one of them, the rain being drawn up by the sun, and it never goes above approximately 6 miles high, because the centrifugal force, he doesn't use that term, but when the earth spins, it generates a centrifugal force that pulls everything back down to the center of the earth. And that's what makes rain. Well, laws are like a double-blade sword or a double-edged sword. A law cuts both directions. What am I saying? What I'm saying is this. Just as we malign the Caucasian for doing what he does with the laws of nature, you have just as much right to do the same thing, but not do it diabolically, the way he may do it.
Right.
You have just as much right to go into a laboratory, look at the germ of a mouse, look at the germ of a sheep, look at the germ of corn. And just as he does it to make money and to be deleterious, you have just as much right to go into a lab, inspect the germ of corn, inspect the germ of okra, inspect the germ of wheat, and modify it just as he does to do good. You see?
Yeah.
So we have to study things like that. And we have to make the teachings of Master Farad Muhammad relevant to today, and not just theoretical and academic the way we do most of the time. We keep it in a theoretical format and an academic format. And what I mean by that is that we discuss it, but we don't carry it into practicality where we can generate a product, a good or a service from what we've been taught. So it always remains academic and never practical. And that is part of the problem.
Yes, sir. So I have a question that goes into that. So, in your opinion, is grafted fruit a bad or good thing? And if it is, and how?
The response to that, dear brother, is it depends. You cannot paint anything with a broad brush. That, in most cases, is never a good thing. So to categorically say that anything genetically engineered is bad, that is unfair, because that is not accurate. And we have to be careful what we say to the people. We must measure everything that we say to the people and make sure to the best of our ability that what we're saying is factual. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's say the gene for weight gain was isolated probably around 1998-1999. It was tested in mice. Now, if you take that same gene and put it in a goat, the briar goat. You see the little goats that you see running around on everybody's farm that probably weigh about 15, 20 pounds. When you slaughter it, you can put the whole goat in one pot. Okay, if you take the weight gain gene and take a goat embryo and incorporate that weight gain gene in a goat embryo, when the goat is born, you put it on a high protein, high fat diet. Well, that same goat that would normally weigh about 20, 25 pounds could double or triple in size. So you're in a country now like Sudan, or a country where you don't have a lot of land, like the islands. You've got some islands in the Caribbean, in Central and South America, that are not very large. So they don't have a lot of space to grow livestock. So you take an animal like that, and you can triple the amount of meat that you get from that animal. Thus, you are producing 50-60% more meat on the same amount of land. That would be a positive situation. Then, if you take there is a bug, a bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis. Inside that bacteria, it produces a venom or poison. I forgot the name of it. But anyway, if a scientist took that gene and delta endotoxin, that's the name of the poison, delta endotoxin. And if you took the gene for delta endotoxin, because most poisons, most enzymes, most everything that does something in a system, a plant or an animal, in most cases, it's going to be a protein. So snake venom is a protein. Enzymes that digest your food, they're proteins. Most everything that does something in the body, it's a protein. And proteins are generated from genes. So if you isolate the gene for the delta endotoxin, put that in an animal embryo or plant embryo, now they do that. Now that's been done so that if insects eat the plant, then the delta endotoxin that's in the plant genetics kill the insect that starts to eat your corn or eat your tomato. But also that's going to have a negative effect on you and I when we eat the plant, when we eat the tomato, or we eat the corn.
Right. So that would be definitely a negative.
Yes, sir.
Or a bad result.
Yes.
So, okay, well, also, there was something else you said right that point. Okay, well, I'll just hold off on my question. But, okay, beautiful answer. So what you're saying is it varies, it depends on, you know, basically what you're doing with the vegetable or, you know, the organism, basically. And so right now we'd like to take the time to go back into our audience and let them pose questions while they're up on the panel. And so, Brother Kareem.
Yes, sir. I'm making the mic. Area code 727. Your mic is live. Area code 727.
Hello?
Yes,
sir.
Okay, assalamu alaikum. Yeah, I had a question. I got two questions for Brother Dimitri.
Brother Victor.
Can y'all hear me?
For Brother,
yes, sir.
Brother Victor.
I'm sorry. I didn't catch the brother name who was just speaking.
Oh yes, sir. It's Brother Victor Muhammad. Yes, sir.
Okay, it sounded like Brother Mitchell, but I apologize for that. The question I had was the first question was, you know, with the government being able to clone fruit and vegetables and genetically modify, you know, animals, and would you say that, you know, it's possible, has been done, that they've cloned humans?
Well, I don't know of any particular incident where that's been done, but I'm sure that it's been done. I mean, because of ethical issues involving it, it hasn't been made public. But because it's so easy to clone something, I'm sure it's been done.
Okay. I've heard things, you know, as far as military-wise, that they've been trying it for a long time. And, my next question was, you know, when you was talking about the rain, the question came to mind. You know, I'm not sure if you are familiar with the heart machine. That is a machine that the government, well, I've heard that the government had to manipulate weather. Would you have any knowledge as far as that machine? Would you think that's false? Or?
I've read about it, and I've read some information on it, but I don't have any real proof that such a machine exists. And the only way that you can say that you know something is that you've done it or seen it with your own eyes. And I have done neither with this machine, so I can't speak intelligently on that.
Okay. Well, I mean, those are the questions I had as far as, you know, the genetically modified stuff and, you know, just certain things that I've heard. I wasn't sure whether it was a myth or not, you know. But, I mean, I did that.
Well, a clone is not genetically modified. What a clone is that you take a let's say you take somebody's go into somebody's cheek in their mouth and take out a cell. You take the nucleus out of that cell, then you get a foreign egg cell from any other organism, and you put that nucleus inside the egg cell of another organism, and you shock it with, you know, jolts of electricity, and that brings that egg cell to life. Then you implant that into another pseudo-pregnant or surrogate female and let her carry it to term. That's generally what a clone is and how you make a clone. And a clone is different from a genetically modified organism. A clone is just a copy of something that's already living. It's not new. It's just an exact copy of it.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Yeah. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I've heard, you know, a lot of things over the internet, seen a lot of things. I'm not sure if it's, you know, actual fact, you know, as far as them actually trying to take the melanin out of you know, black people and put it into the skin of Caucasians, you know.
Well, that's probably another myth, dear brother, because I'm pretty sure Caucasian people contain melanin. What Caucasian people do not have is an enzyme called tyrosine dehydrogenase, and that's the enzyme that allows the melanin to come out of a clump, and it's spread across the cell surface the way it does in people who say that, you know, we say people of color. I don't think it's accurate to say that Caucasian people don't have melanin. I don't think that's accurate.
Okay, I see. And you see, well, I mean, that's all the questions I had. I just was, I was just throwing something out there.
Yes, sir.
I thank you for your insight on that, brother.
Yes, sir. You're welcome, brother.
Yes, sir. Beautiful question, Brother Cedric.
What's his brother name again, brother? I didn't catch your name.
Brother Victor Muhammad.
I still didn't catch that.
Brother Victor.
I probably got a bad connection.
Brother Victor. Yes, sir. V-I-C-T-E-R, Brother Victor.
Victor. Okay.
Mike Vic. Yes, sir. Thank you so much, dear brother, for those beautiful questions, and thank you, man. It was some very very interesting questions.
Oh yeah, thank you, bro.
No problem, brother. Thank you. Thank you. Was that it, brother? Brother Kareem, did we have any guests, any other guests that wanted to pose questions to Brother Victor?
No, sir, not at this time. We do not have any guests that wanted to pose questions. There is, however, some things going on in chat I'm dealing with right now. But we don't have anybody else on the phone lines or in chat that are actually asking questions. However, I would, if you would allow me to, like to make a comment myself.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, big bro.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. First and foremost, I want to thank you all for allowing me to be of service tonight. I want to thank our brother, Dr. Victor Muhammad, for his being here on Nation Building Movement, Young, Gifted, and Black tonight. It is indeed an honor to have you here. I have learned many things myself, and I call myself being well-studied. But I've learned quite a bit tonight. My comment, though, is really about exactly what you said about us not actually, and I would use the term actualizing what Master Farad Muhammad has given us. We do a lot of discussion. We talk, we can recite. However, it to me, what you said reflects directly back to problem number 13 of the problem book, where it states, Islam is mathematics and mathematics is Islam. You can prove it at no limit of time. You must now learn to use your mathematical theology to gain some benefit while you are living. Of course, it does say luxury, money, good home, friendship, and all walks of life. My concern is more so just up to that point where it says you must now learn to use your mathematical theology, which was given to us by God himself, to gain some benefit while you're living. And I just, again, want to thank you, brother, for putting it into perspective in that way, because that is my main focus, is practical application of what we've been given. And so, like I said, there aren't any more questions, so I'm going to leave it at that. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Yes, sir. Beautiful insight. Brother Victor, did you want to comment on that? Or?
Well, almost, brother. There's nothing to say, because I would advise everyone to not talk a lot, because it's not necessary. Learn to use language that conveys exactly the point that you want to make known. Once you've made that point, then stop speaking, because then it becomes redundant, you know. And the more knowledge we acquire, the more we should not speak, because the more knowledge we acquire, then you realize that it doesn't take a lot of talking to get across your point. If you speak the truth, listen to this now, if we speak the truth, then there won't be much to say.
That's real.
That's real. I couldn't help but laugh. I had to mute my phone to laugh on that one, because how it's so, I mean, it's not rude or anything. It's right to the point, but it's just, it's funny because people won't say that the way you pointedly put it out. If once you made your point, you don't say anything else. And it's just too many times you hear conversations, or I've been guilty of it myself, where, you know,
I may have said something, you know, I can agree with something or I'm making a comment or whatever, and then I keep talking just because I, whether it's I don't feel like my point was across or if I don't feel like it was, you know, concise or however, whatever the reason is, and then it becomes redundant.
But see, but a lot of us do that because it is other things that we want to say. Maybe we just don't know how to say them like, you know, a highly educated person would know how to say it, you know, so we're looking for the words. And so, you know, that's all I would like to say about that, you know.
Well, dear brother, I think I understand what you intend when you say highly educated. But those generally are the people who don't know what to say. I generally, when I work a job, I would be, let's say I was at Johns Hopkins Medical School, and people would always find me sitting down in the basement with the so-called blue-collar people. Or I would go to the deli and just sit there and drink coffee and talk with the people that worked in the cafeteria or something. And all the other scientists would always look at me and they would want to ask me, you know, why do you do that, Victor? And the reason I did that is because those people are real. They're real. And the conversations they have, they're real. So right now, I go to the barbershop, and I'll go to the barbershop, and I'll start an argument on purpose. Why do I start the argument? Because I get them in a clamor, and while they're in the clamor, I start teaching them, and they don't even realize that I'm teaching them. Because I got them in an argument, got them riled up. I'll say something controversial. I know it's controversial, you know. And oftentimes they'll cuss me out or whatever or call me names. But I take that because my objective is to insert something in them without them even knowing they've been inoculated. And I get up and leave. You know, because the objective in life, if you are a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, then you should have figured out a way to teach the people without the people opposing you. Because if you've got to engage in an argument with the people, then you're not going to be able to teach them. And being able to recite a whole lot of facts, it doesn't mean that you know what you're doing.
Come on.
Anyone can memorize something, but when you can take information and create a utility with that information, that proves that you now understand it. Why? Because you can do something with it. And it is only knowledge when you can apply it, when you can do something with it. Otherwise, we are just pontificators.
That's right. That's right. And like the Bible says, with all thy getting, get ye understanding. And so,
yes, sir.
You know, we can have all the knowledge that we want, but it's not all about knowing. It's about knowing and understanding what you know. And so I definitely agree with that, dear brother. And so
yes, sir.
At this time, I would like to state some facts about forming that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in his lecture address last Saturday posed to us about forming and gave us a better understanding of what we need as far as the necessities of life, and, you know, made us just see it as far as a pinpoint, you know, like a program, a blueprint of what we need and how we should go about getting it, and, you know, just giving us the number one priority, which is the land. And so one of the things he said that is farming is the first profession that Allah God gave us. It's the first profession he introduced to man. You know, he said that farming is the engine of our national life. And the proof is in Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. And he told the man, he put Adam in the garden, and he told him to dress it and to keep it. And what he meant by that was translated by Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He said he meant animal husbandry, which means the breeding or raising of livestock, not even just that, but the keeping of the land, cultivating it, maintenance, and decorating it, and things of that nature. And then he went on to say, it is very true, he said, it is very true that we must have land because it is the basis of independence, which I definitely agree. And he said, we are more dependent now than we've ever been. And then he said, most health specialists agree that the loss of health of black people is directly related to the foods that we consume. And then he shared with us from the message to the black man given by the honorable, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said on page 56, man depends on land for the necessities of life. He said food, clothing, and shelter for survival. He said a prime requisite, meaning like a requirement for freedom and independence, is having one's own land. He said there can be no freedom without a people having their own land. And so he also quoted the most honorable Elijah Muhammad in the Message to the Black Man, page 196. He said the economical way to use the money you saved is to first buy farmland and produce your own food. He said you can raise enough cattle, sheep, and cows and chickens by the thousands if you try following our program. We should purchase real estate, buy farmland and timberland. And then, you know, and this goes into our topic in discussion, which was the power of the good and the importance of good food and the power of growing it. And so, you know, when we produce food, we cut the price of feeding one another down to very little to nothing. And when you grow timberland or trees, which is used for creating lumber, that is used to build things. And also, cotton, you know, the linen of our clothes, that cotton has to be grown. And so in order to grow that, we need land, you know, and then we could sell the proceeds or the surplus of it, you know, for as much as we want. And this is all taught to us by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad in his book, Message to the Black Man, in the section titled Help Self. It's titled Help Self, What Must Be Done with the So-Called Negroes. And he also says, as a people, we must become producers and not remain consumers and employees. We must be able to extract raw materials from the earth and manufacture them into something useful for ourselves. This would create jobs and production. He said, we must remember that without land, there is no production. He said, the surplus, meaning the profit or the excess of what we produce, we would sell. And then he said, this would develop a field of commerce and trade as other free and independent people whose population is less than that of 20 million so-called Negroes who are dependent in America. And so, you know, I just want to say that, you know, this is very true. You know, this is telling us the power of growing. You know, if we produce our own foods and if we have the land to produce it, you know, growing things and producing things from the earth, extracting out of the earth things that we need, the necessities of life, you know, this will produce jobs and it will produce independence, you know, as a people. We will be a more independent people. We'll produce our own food, so it will cost little to nothing for us to eat. And so the proceeds, the surplus of it, we could sell it, and the surplus of things like cotton and linen and things like that, we can make our own clothes, and then that will cut the price of our, you know, dressing and things of that nature. And so just to talk about the power of growing for a second, you know, I just wanted to go into that. And to also some other facts that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan gave us. He said, no people can be free with their mouths in the kitchen of another, particularly in the kitchen of our former slave masters and their children. He said, as long as we do not own land, we're not going to be a productive people. We will continue to be a consumer nation. A consumer nation is one who just, you know, consuming. They are taking, but they are never giving. You know, they are receiving, but they are never, you know, returning that favor, you know, giving and providing, meaning, for, you know, providing for self. And he said, we will continue to be a consumer nation, and as long as we are not respecting the profession of farming and the cultivation of land and the producing of quality food, then our life and our wealth and our well-being is in the hands of our former slave masters and their children. He said, and I would just like to share some more facts that he gave. He said, according to the 2007 United States Census of Agriculture, farming as an occupation has decreased from 64% of the labor force in 1850 to less than 1% in 2013. You know, something that provided, you know, 64% of, you know, jobs for people, 64% out of 100 jobs for people, is down to 1% in 2013. And that is just, like, ridiculous. That means we are literally out of farmers. Like, you know, there are being no more farmers reproduced. You know, like, we need more agricultural risk, like our dear brother, Dr. Victor Muhammad. You know, we need more people like you that are willing to teach us and give us the knowledge that that's been kept from us to, you know, produce for ourselves. And, you know, and also he said there are over 313 million people living in the United States, and out of that population, less than 1% claim farming as an occupation. He said, so that means 6,500,000 farms owned by farmers in America at one time. So far, America is now down to 2.2 million farms. At one time, it used to be 6,500,000 farms owned by farmers in America at one time, and now we are down to 2.2 million farms. And so, you know, that is like a very big you know, downfall or decrease, I would say. And he also said, as we can see, that we are looking at the destruction of the engine of our national life, the thing that, you know, that is the engine of all life.
And so, brother.
Yes, sir.
Let me interrupt you, please. Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
One of the things that we quite often do, and I work with healthcare people, and during the times when we speak, we give a lot of statistics, and that is good information. But the question that I always come to them after they've given the statistics and say to them is, I said, okay, that's good, but why? You see, there are all kinds of diseases and all kinds of ills. But in every disease that you have, whether it's a social disease, a psychological disease, or a biological disease, there's always a cause. And it doesn't matter how many statistics we recite. If we don't come back and follow up our recitation of statistics with this one question, why? Why? What caused it? Until you can answer that question, until we can answer that question, then these are just exercises in oratory. Because you cannot solve any problem without first knowing what caused it. Otherwise, it's just an exercise in oratory, you see. And so when you look at the situation with the farmers in America and the world, the majority of the grain that is grown in the Midwest, Colorado, Wyoming, Washington State, what happens to all that wheat? The majority of it is sent to Japan and China. They come over here and they buy it. It's called farming futures. And it's sold before it's even planted. The majority of the fruits and vegetables that are sold in this country, they're not produced in this country. They come from Chile, they come from Mexico, they come from Guatemala, Belize, you know, Brazil. And what happened to the farmers in this country? Why did it go from 64% of the population in the 1800s down to less than 1% now? Why? Because we cannot correct that problem if we don't first know what caused it. Because if we start to try to correct it without knowing what caused it, then we might become part of that 63% that is no longer farming. What happened to the 63%? You see, that's what we have to answer. Because now you have companies that are multinational, like Monsanto, ConAgra, Archer's Daniels Midland, and companies like that, that now produce almost everything that you wear, everything that you eat, and everything that you drink. About three companies that are now producing the majority of the world's food.
Wow.
You see. So I'm not saying that statistics are not important. But we have to become reactive and proactive. Right now, black people and most Americans are reactive.
Reactive.
Yes. We don't do anything except we read a lot and we talk a lot. You know, but we're not proactive. So some people came in the late 1800s and just took farming from us. And nobody raised any concern about that. Because what happened to the American people that you can take farming from us and we don't even fight about it? You see, because we've been given things to play with. We've been given smartphones. We've been given computers and notebooks and the thing, the iThing and the iPad and, you know. And so go outside right now, literally. Go outside right now. And you can probably see somebody driving down the street right now with their head down and they're punching on a smartphone or an iPad while they're driving. Literally right now. And this is what the people have been turned into. You see? So yes, your country has been taken from you. And so has the feeding of your children and yourselves. So now we've got 8-year-old sons that weigh 120 pounds, and that's common. We've got 7-year-old daughters that already have breasts and buttocks, and that doesn't bother us. So oftentimes I do lectures for the health departments and everything like that, and people ask me to speak on HIV and AIDS. And I say, okay, I'll do that. But I get to the point. I don't do a whole lot of fancy talking. I get straight to the point. I say, how can we talk about treating HIV/AIDS and reducing HIV/AIDS when America has the highest divorce rate in the world? I said, do you think there's a correlation between the divorce rate and HIV/AIDS infection? And everybody starts looking like a deer caught in the headlights. You see, then I raise this question. I say, in America, you have what is called a video. You have the black woman who we put in front of a camera, bend her over, and she claps her buttocks together in a video, and we send that around the world. Everything in life is connected. Everything. Some things more remotely than others, but everything in life is connected. And if you want to solve a problem, you must first ask one question, and that is, why? That's all I wanted to say.
Yes, sir. Beautiful, well said comment, brother. And I would just like to say that for the most part, that, you know, I don't know it all, but I do know what, you know, my teacher and divine God, not God, but God, and my God teaches me through the holiness of Farrakhan that, you know, the cause is the wicked slave master. It's not really ourselves, that sometimes it can be ourselves, but they have did so much to us to the point where you cannot really, you know, point the finger at the effect. You have to go to the cause. So, in Islam, that's what we believe in, going to the cause. We believe when you get into the cause, you get into the mind of God, because you are dealing with the illness. You are dealing with the sickness. You are not dealing with what the sickness, you know, causes, or, you know, what the sickness affects. We really are stressing and trying to get down to why, but the Honorable Minister of Farrakhan tells us the reason why we own no land is because they deprived us, I believe in the 1850s, to even buy land, and they gave out over 450 million acres or so of land, and we got none of it, and they gave it to outsiders, what they call aliens, people that integrated from other places before they even gave it to us. So we were left out as a people, being treated as dogs and cattle, and, you know, in chattel slavery. So that is mainly the cause why thank the Honorable Louis Farrakhan. You know, at this time, I would like to give everybody a chance to say a closing word because we have to end this out. And our time is up for Young, Gifted, and Black. And Brother Victor, I would just like to personally thank you so much. You're a beautiful brother, very well-spoken, very knowledgeable, and we would love to have you back on to, you know, to just continue this because we need to really get down to what we need to do and why this is coming about and what we need to do to further move forward and not be the victims and the effects of some wicked cause. And so I thank you again, dear brother, for all your beautiful questions and answers and comments and statements. I thank you so much. And thank you again for being on when you certainly didn't have to. And we thank you so much for taking the time to give us your knowledge and your life experiences and testimony and things of that nature. Thank you so much, dear brother.
You're welcome, brother.
And so, go ahead, sis.
Yes, sir. I just would, again, like to thank you again, Brother Victor, for so much knowledge. And it's not even just with the, I just learned so much, and it's not with just the food and the science and the things like that, but just your other insights that you put in and that just got my gears grinding and thinking what I can do with the information that I know and my further growth and knowledge and understanding things, just using some of the examples that you gave as far as, you know, you going into a barbershop, you know, that example that you gave, and how can I incorporate that into, you know, my everyday life with the people that I encounter, with my coworkers and things like that. So I appreciate that. And just you said that we should work on the way that we work on our language, and I think that is so key and so important to be able to hold a conversation or have a discussion, you know, whether it be a discussion that goes on for hours, but let it be a conversation that isn't redundant or that is to the point, and, you know, it can be a good conversation where it continues on for a while versus a conversation that goes on for a while but the same thing just being repeated. So I just really like those things that you pointed out. We have a lot of information, but nobody wants to just be talked at. And so I just really believe that's key. And I really appreciate, you know, you and the knowledge that you have and your time, your spirit, and your energy. So thank you again. I've learned a lot.
You're welcome, sister.
Brother Kareem?
Yes, ma'am.
Over the phone? Yes, sir. I just wanted to ask if we could get a head count before we close off the call.
You said a head count for the phone? Well, I mean, there have been people going in and out. At one point, you had listed 17 callers. But, again, those numbers, you get some true numbers from the report, from the actual report. You can get that from Queen Aziza. But
okay.
At one point you were at 17. We were at 17 callers at one point. And as Brother Ronnie has said, we are really out of time. So I would like to go through the announcements briefly, and then you all can close out in the manner that you do.
Yes, sir.
So, again, tomorrow night, excuse me, we have our Brother Vernon Muhammad with No Romance Without Finance. That's at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow evening, Sunday. Monday, we will be right back here on Nation Building Movement with my show, Conscious Black Nation. The topic is that the same mind that was in Christ Jesus be also in you. On Tuesday, we'll be right here with our brother, Jihad Muhammad, with Out on the Front Line with the Fruit of Islam. That's on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Wednesday, our hip-hop comedy show with DJ Black Caesar. It starts at 8 p.m. On Thursday, Queen Aziza with Nation Building Presents. And forgive me, I do not remember what her topic was that she gave us one. Also, that's on Thursday at 8 p.m. Friday, 8 p.m., Put on the New Man with Student Minister James Muhammad. And then, of course, we'll be back right back here on next Saturday at 8 p.m. with our two fantastic young hosts, Brother Ronnie and Sister Yatira, here on Young, Gifted, and Black. That's all the announcements. And so, as I say, you close out in your usual manner.
That's all. Yes, sir. Walaikum salam. Thank you again, dear brother, for the promotion. We also would like to promote our beloved minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and his lecture series, Part 37. For those who missed it, make sure you go back and check it out, noi.org, and click on the time and what must be done for Part 37, for the time and what must be done. And also for those who missed it, again, you can go to youtube.com, click and type in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on the time and what must be done, Part 37, and you can get it there. Thank you again for all the guests and listeners, for our panelists, Brother Victor Muhammad, who was very beautiful, very excellent panelist tonight. Thank you, Sister Queen, our hostess, Yatiria, and Brother Kareem, and now I would like to take the time to close us out in prayer. So I will ask everybody on a manner of prayer. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, who came to us in the person of Master Farah Muhammad, all praise is due to Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, Master Day, the Master of this day of judgment in which we now live. Thee alone do we beseech for aid, and thee alone do we serve, thee alone do we beseech for aid. Guide us along the right path, the path of those upon those thou hast bestowed favors, and not the path of those upon thou wrath is brought down, nor of those who go astray after they have heard thy teaching. Say he, Allah is one. Allah is he whom nothing is independent, but upon whom all depend. He neither begets, nor is he begotten, and none is like him. And I bear witness that none deserves to be served besides Allah. And I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is his true servant and last apostle, and that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine servant, reminder, and comforter in our midst today. Ameen.
I mean.
Assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
That's it.